is Road to the Draft with Cal Toomey and Matt Edwards.
Well, hello and welcome to episode 4 of Road to the Draft. This is Callum Toomey. There's no Nate Edwards this week. Unfortunately, she's unavailable. She's off to China with the AFL and their big contingent there, going to watch the Port Adelaide and Gold Coast game. So in her absence, we've got Mitch Cleary on the podcast for the first time on Road to the Draft. I think of any podcast, actually, on afl.com.au.
First time in the studio, Cal.
What do you think of it?
It's nice. It's a nice little tune that comes off your voice in here. So I've heard a lot of this program and looking forward to being part of it for the next hour or so.
Maybe Song of the Week should actually be just me singing it from now on, because the echoing in here is just beautiful. Jack's done a great job of making this room really soundproof. Look, there's a bit to talk about today, and there always is in terms of the draft because it's always heating up, and we're going to have a look at some recent performances. Obviously, Tassie won the Under 18 Academy Series, so we're going to look at some of the best Tasmanian prospects. It's not as dire as people are talking about out of Tassie.
Yep.
And we'll have a look at some father-sons. You've got some news on a couple of guys who you've been following and writing about in recent weeks. We actually had a chat with Max King, which was really good to speak to him. Obviously, he's out for the year and hasn't really spoken in the media much since that injury.
Off the top, how does this injury affect his draft position? Is it
It's a good question.
Too simplistic to ask you right now? We think still top 10.
Definitely top 10. I still think he's a top 5 pick. I don't think it's going to be hard for a club to take him pick 1 now, I think. I think that's where it could change it a little bit. He was definitely the number 1 mix. Maybe now Ben's in the number 1 mix, his brother. But look, it's just, you think about those clubs right at the bottom of the ladder. If it's Brisbane, can they risk it and take a guy who's coming off a knee reconstruction? Would they play it a bit safer, go Lukosius or Walsh? So that's where I think it could sort of impact the injury.
And without taking anything away from the interview to come, does he get a year in the gym now? They're pretty lean kids, the Kings.
You're giving it all away. wait and find out, Mitch, and to our listeners. Look, he speaks really well, and it was good to speak to him and see and hear that he's in pretty good spirits despite his setback. So we'll have a chat with him and then all the Twitter questions later on. Tassie. There's been so much spoken about Tassie.
Where have they been the last couple of years?
Well, nowhere. It's been riding on the back of Hugh Dixon, really. Yeah. He's the only player to be drafted out of Tassie in the past 2 years. He went to Freo. But look, they won the Academy Series on the weekend. 5 wins from 5. Taron Thomas. Actually, I should point this out as well. It's pronounced Taron.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So I've asked him.
We had the interesting weekend of Ben Ronk over the weekend, so it's good that you put that off the top, because I don't think Ben Ronk had much to say on the Road to the Draft podcast in his lead up.
No, he didn't get a chance to
put his head on Taron this year. So.
He didn't get a chance to clarify that one. And look, we might slip into occasionally calling him Taron. I don't think he minds too much either way, but he did say to me that it's probably preferred to call it Taron. So for everyone out there listening, it's Taron Thomas. And he kicked 5 goals on the weekend to claim the Hunter Harrison medal as the best player of Division 2. He's just a standout.
How's he going to go when the Allies squad is announced in the next couple of days against these Division 1 kids when he really gets a chance to put his name up?
Well, everyone's talking about him as being a top 3, top 5 proposition, and you can see why. He was in the MVP for Tassie 2 years ago as an under-16 player,
yep.
And then he went and won it in the under-16s 2 weeks later. So he's been on the scene for a while now. He deserves this sort of credit and being talked about as an early selection. Where he goes in the draft, I think, will be shaped a lot by how he goes for the Allies, because if he can continue this form, and he's obviously in outstanding form, but he's playing against some guys who aren't up to it, definitely not up to his level. If he can do that against the Division 1 teams, then there's no reason why a top 5 bid shouldn't come for him.
And for those who haven't seen much of him play, there's highlights on our website right now, but what's the one quality that stands out for you? When you watch him and you have throughout this Academy series, what's the one trait that stands out?
He's got class. He's just got class and composure and time, and look, all of those things probably go hand in hand, don't they? I mean, if you've got one of them, you probably do have the other couple of attributes. But he just moves really smoothly. He uses the ball well. He's picked up a bit of size too. He's about 188, 189 centimetres now. So that's a nice midfield size.
Yep.
And you can play off half back, off half forward. He's been playing through the midfield. Look at our Prime Prospects videos over the last couple of weeks. There's a goal that he kicked,
yep.
A blind turn. I think it got a wow out of even you, Mitch.
Yep.
It was just sensational. So he certainly got all that class. Nick Blakey was second on the Hunter Harrison Medal board with 24 votes out of a possible however many.
Yep.
And Bailey Scott and Tasmanian Fraser Turner shared third place with 14 votes. Taron Thomas polled 35, so he was well and truly deserving of that spot. So he wasn't the only one, though.
Does the prospect, just on Taron Thomas, is the prospect of what he will deliver North Melbourne this year, if they do decide to take him, really offset what they lost, forego in seeing Nick Blakey choose Sydney?
Good question. I mean, we hear Brad Scott talk about sort of the academy sort of system and whether that's really aimed towards the father-son guys. They obviously lost on Nick Blakey. It offset it a fair bit. I tell you what, it would have been nice to get two of them though for him, for North and Brad Scott. Look, he's a really good player, and it's going to be hard to separate those two throughout the year. They're very different players. Taran's a midfielder slash half forward, and Blakey's sort of more key position slash midfielder. So they're pretty different, but both right in that top 10 mix for sure.
Looking through a number of these names here from the Tassie side and kids who will push to the Allies squad, I can forecast clubs, other Victorian clubs outside of North Melbourne, raising question marks on this process. I've just got a feeling that this will come. But there's a couple of kids here, Matthew McGuinness, Nick Baker, a couple of these kids who are going to be on North's radar in years to come.
Yeah, well, they'll be on radar of every club this year. I mean, Nick Baker actually played for North Melbourne's VFL side against the AFL Academy earlier in the year. He's a halfback flanker, midfielder, big body. He's not actually a member of their NGA, though, okay. So they don't get priority access to him. Matt McGuinness, they do. He's an Indigenous background player, NGA for North. He's the younger brother of Josh McGuinness, who came through the system, was on the Lions list, and Ben McGuinness, who was around the mark as well and was a part of the AFL Academy. So there's a couple of NGA players there, as well as Ryan Mansell. He's a small forward and small defender and a member of their NGA system. So they've got a couple of prospects there outside of Taran who they might be able to pick up later in the draft. And look, it's looking like a pretty prosperous year for Tasmania. I mean, there's been so much doubt and, I guess, gloomy skies around Tasmanian footy in the past couple of years, and particularly this year with the sort of closure of a couple of their TSL sides. But they look like having a pretty good crop. I mean, whether it's going to be as good as that 2013 crop where they had the College Asnies and Nankervis as well, we'll wait and see. But with Taran, Chase Jones I'm a big fan of. He was the captain of the Tassie side. He had 19 touches and five clearances on the weekend, and that was sort of his best game since round one when he kicked four goals. So he's a really dogged midfielder who just works hard. I think he'll be a player who a lot of people will like because he's got a bit of personality to him. He really gets the most out of himself.
Where do you see him sitting in the draft pecking order at the moment?
I think he's around the top 20. Yeah. I think he's in the top 20 at the moment. He can play small back, small forward, and through the midfield, so I like him. Blair Rubock was a player that we did feature on Prime Prospects a couple of weeks ago. A lively small forward. He kicked six goals in a game throughout the Academy series, so he was very good. And Fraser Turner, who we just mentioned, in the top four sort of players of the Hunter Harrison medal. So a real standout, really, across the championships. He's a wingman. He actually played top age 16s last year. So I guess you're able to do that if sort of circumstances allow it because he was born on the 26th of the 12th. So he's only sort of qualifying for this year's draft by less than a week. So he's an outside midfielder, a bit of work to do on his body, as you'd expect, being a younger age. He won't turn 18 until after Chrissy, but he's someone to look for, and I think clubs will have him on their radar for sure.
And before this Allies squad is announced, who are some other names in this Allies team that you're really looking forward to seeing them pit themselves against the Division 1 teams? Because Bailey Scott, as you mentioned, can't wait to see what he has to deliver after what he did last year.
Yeah, and he's a big talking point too, isn't he? Because obviously Nick Blakey has had the option to choose, and he has chosen the Swans as his sort of preferred destination at the end of the year. But Bailey Scott also has three options, doesn't he, between the Gold Coast Academy, where he is now, North Melbourne and Geelong, where he's a father-son option. Look, he picked up 31 touches, six clearances, and kicked two goals on the weekend. So he'll enter the Allies in some good confidence and good form. So he's one that I do look forward to seeing how he goes. He played last year, got a taste for it. And as Blakey too. I mean, Blakey missed most of the Allies games last year with injury, so he'll be pretty revved up to play well against some guys that he'd be pitting himself as top 10 picks. So look, there's plenty in that. Look, we'll move on to the father sons though, because there's one I want to ask you about. You wrote about him in the last few days. His name's Tom Graham. He's the son of Mark, former Hawk and Tiger. What can you tell us about him?
Yeah, well, the Hawks are pretty excited about what they've... This kid was playing basketball up until sort of 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
Dominated a school carnival playing for Camberwell. He's 195 centimetres or 6'4 in the old. And the Hawks only sort of got to learn more about him in the last couple of weeks and already understand the phones have been running hot. They're trying to get him onto the Oakley Chargers list in the VFL. In the TSC Cup. Yep. So obviously we must stress at this school competition that he did, I think he had 14 or 15 scoring shots in probably what was a standard game. It's not an APS or an AGS that is spoken about on this program quite a bit. So it would be exciting to see what he can do against the TAC Cup kids and in that quality. But his athletic prowess is something that stands out from a few people I've spoken to about him. His leaping vertical jump is something that stands out. So right now, I think that the talk was that he might have been a Category B, but he did play in that structured school competition, so that rules him out. I think a club will take a punt on him, just where that sits in what is a pretty strong draft.
Clarify as well, Didn't play enough games for the Tigers?
That's right. So 20 games for Richmond. His father played it in his last year of footy. So yep. Terry Wallace picked him up. I think it was 04 or 05 that last year. And
yep.
There's actually vision of Tom Graham running onto the field in his dad's last game, bursting through the banner before any of the Richmond players could catch him. So 223 games for Hawthorn, his old man, as a defender. So they do get first priority to bid for him.
Yep.
And speaking to his dad, Mark, over the weekend, he said the Dingley prospect of the new facilities is something that jumps out to Tom. He's a Hawks fan as yep. well. So
okay.
turns 18 in July. I think a few clubs are just starting to learn a bit more about him, and will do when he finds his way to Oakley.
Absolutely. Now, we may as well keep on the Category B sort of storyline at the moment, because this has been one you've been following. What can you tell us about Austin Bradke?
Yeah, another basketball, and I think what we're seeing with Tom Graham may have even impacted on what Austin made his decision late last year to focus on footy. I think he's met with six or seven clubs in recent times, and might have been a few others knocking at the door that may have just missed out. He turns 18 at the end of this month, I think, and in the next couple of weeks, I think we'll learn more on his decision. I think the five clubs that I've narrowed it down to, and there could be another club in the mix that we aren't aware of, but St Kilda, Carlton, Melbourne, Collingwood and Geelong, I think, are the five. And he does live Bayside in Sandringham, so St Kilda may have come into that mix. Obviously, his father, Mark, a basketball champion, and Nicole, his mother, was a dual Grand Slam mixed doubles champion.
Good bloodlines. Yeah. Is it right the Bombers might have come in with a late bid or late interest?
I think so. So we wrote a piece in recent times on the website. A few clubs might have picked up on where that sat and had his name catapulted, because you talk about the Category B, he's at Haileybury College, so he's very close with our later guest, Max King and yep. Ben King, the twins. We know what Haileybury's been able to do in the last couple of years. I think they had seven draftees last year. So he's seen it all. He's seen what his schoolmates have been able to do. And I think that may have been a big part of his decision to follow AFL and give up the chance to play scholarships and follow scholarships in the US.
Often with these cases, I find that the Category B guys, they often go to the clubs that contact them first. They sort of build up a bit of a trust and loyalty with them. So it's often easiest to get in first and get in straight away. Look, it's an interesting one, the Category B space, isn't it? Because it's an opportunity for clubs to work on kids outside the system, and it's basically a free hit.
Yep.
It's outside the salary cap once they play. You can sign them at any time. And there's even rumours like maybe Will Sutherland, if he did want to give up cricket down the track, he can just go back and choose whatever footy team he wanted to play with.
The Alex Keith scenario, isn't it? So Will Sutherland will be on the radar of people, and yeah, let's hope he does crack it and make it at the top level of cricket. But there always is that prospect. I'm sure, Cal, there'd be a club ready to jump if he wanted to move back to footy.
Well, I've heard the rumour that maybe he's sort of reconsidering, but I don't think that's got a lot of weight at the moment. I think his cricket's going quite well. So I think everyone just likes talking about Will because he's a real big talent. Now, the father-sons, there is a bit of news about a couple of them.
Yeah, some news in recent times out of Essendon with Mason Fletcher. What can you tell us on this one? Because Essendon fans are dying to know where this one sits.
Yeah, he looks like he's going to miss the rest of the season with a lower back stress fractures. So it's obviously one that you keep pretty cautious with, given he's a growing youngster, a tall player.
Jeez, he's grown, hasn't he? He's 199. I think he might have grown 4 or 5 in the last 12 months.
He's lanky.
Yeah.
He's lanky. It's those arms and those legs. They've got a bit of growth in them, and a bit of Inspector Gadget looking like him at the moment. Just needs the big coat like you wear on footy feed sometimes. he sits at the back end of the draft. I think he's a back end player slash a rookie pick. And speaking to Ian Kite today, the Calder Cannons talent manager, he feels that he's probably done enough to show that he can be listed at some point.
Yep.
But I see him as a later pick. I have seen him as a later pick. And I guess this setback would probably mean that he's unlikely to go anywhere near the early stages of the draft. He's got a bit of work to do in terms of his competitive stuff with the ball when the ball's in the air. He's still very light and he gets pushed around a little bit. But it's a bit of a blow to him because he would have been hoping to play in Vic Metro's championships games.
We read so much about these key forwards. The Kings are, I think they're in the early 200s.
Yep.
The key forwards are getting bigger. The ruckmen are getting bigger. Mm-hmm. Does it mean that key defenders are now going to have to get bigger? Because Mason Fletcher at 199, we see a number of star key defenders in the AFL, you know, consolidated as key defenders in the early 190s. Dale Morris still does it.
Hurley's not that big. Yeah. Rance isn't exceptionally tall. McGovern's a bit taller, but not a 200 player.
Is this
Carlisle's probably the prototype of the big key defender, isn't he? He's the 200-centimetre guy who can mark over his head and run all day. So he's probably the guy that if you could build a key defender, it'd look like Jake Carlisle. But there's not many like him, though, are there?
So we're going to see more Mason Fletchers at 199 come onto the scene as bigger key defenders.
If they're good enough. I mean, Aaron Norton's with 194, 195. Yeah. He's shown to be good enough and big enough. So I don't think those couple of centimetres mean that much if you can read the ball in the air and intercept the mark. Another injury update on a father-son is Joel Crocker, who we wrote about last week and have seen photos of him since in a bit of a hospital bed, I think the situation was. Had a syndesmosis ankle injury.
Buzzword, isn't it? You wrote about OP during the week, but syndesmosis has come out of nowhere.
Well, what was syndesmosis before syndesmosis? It must have been something. He injured himself training at school footy, I think, out there at Brighton Grammar. I'd watched him play a week or so earlier for Brighton and kick five. He was exceptional. It was his first game back from injury. He had a bad ankle injury last year. It was basically the same injury last year to the other ankle. He was back for a couple of weeks, and now he's gone now with another injury, and that'll be out for he'd be out for the rest of the year. So the son of Darren Crocker, who himself had some injury worries at North Melbourne during his career, which is a bit of a shame. But, yeah, it's a bit of a blow for Joel. I think he's going to be a later selection now, a rookie. It's hard to sort of see another club placing a bid on him any time early in the draft, given he just has been so unexposed, I guess.
So just on North Melbourne, there's a chance we see Joel Crocker join the footy club, Taran Thomas, Bailey Scott still up in the air.
Yeah.
It could be a good crop for North Melbourne.
It could be. I mean, they'll be hoping that they can get a pick in before Taran Thomas, before a bid comes there. I mean, that'll be interesting to see how that one plays out and whether they trade their first pick and maybe go into a points deficit for next year. We'll wait and see on how they've sort of played out. I'm sure they're looking at creative ways to get around that and get the most out of this year's group. But, yeah, Bailey Scott, if I had to bet on Bailey Scott at the moment, I'd sort of say Gold Coast was still the favourite there, but I'm not sure with the father-son clubs. But they're in a good space. They're in a good space. Look, there are many father-sons, though, because they're everywhere. We did a story on them last week, club by club, the Wednesday special on afl.com.au, and every club has them coming out of every orifice.
You can't look any further than the Silvanis. What can you tell us about Ben Silvani? I understand you've seen him play in recent times. What can Carlton fans look forward to on this case?
Yeah, I went and watched Xavier on the weekend. It wasn't a day for key forwards. It wasn't a day for many players, actually. It was a pretty scrappy contest, very windy down there at Xavier. Look, he's a key forward. He's taller than Jack. He probably doesn't get quite as much of the ball as Jack did at the same stage of his development. Still a lot of work to do. I think he's a latest selection or maybe a rookie. He's not certainly at the top end. And even Jack was picked 53, I think, in the end, where the Essendon bid came. I don't think at this stage that Silvani would be in that top 50. So he's sort of towards the back end. Obviously, his father, Stephen Silvani, the list manager at Carlton, was there watching the game on the weekend as well. Playing with him at Xavier was Zach Hart, who's the son of Ben Hart, champion for the Crows. Smaller type, sort of got the same looking body shape in some ways, same haircut.
He won't like that, Benny Hart.
he's smaller top, but look, he's got a bit of go about him. I think the Crows would look at him probably more as a rookie type, though they've picked up a couple of father-son rookies in recent years. Jake Bradshaw, I've seen from Murray a couple of times as well. He's a Lions prospect. I see him more of as a later selection. James Rendell is probably more of a chance for the Lions at this stage. He's the son of Matty Rendell, former Fitzroy player. He's shown a bit for the Dragons so far.
He's
going
to have a tough decision to make this year, Matty Rendell.
On what he does?
Yeah.
Why? Whether he bids on his son. Yeah. Does a Scotty Clayton situation. I think he'd probably let him go through to the keeper later on. Nick Dacos, watched him at school level a couple of weeks ago. He's coming through in a couple of years, so not this year's draft, but the younger brother of Josh, obviously. A bit of talent there. Moves just like Josh too.
Will Kelly's one, because I know Pies fans were left scratching their heads, and every week Jake plays for the Crows, that they're left more bemused as to why the Pies didn't pick Jake. He played in a grand final last year and has gone from strength to strength without Jake Lever this year. What can you tell us about Will Kelly? Because the Pies are going to have a decision to make there.
I like him. I really like him, but I think he's been played out of position a little bit. I see him more as a defender. He's been playing as a forward at school level and also for the Chargers a little bit. I like him more as a defender. He's a sort of third tall type. Pretty athletic. I watched him play for Scotch last year as a defender and liked what we saw there. So I think he'll get taken. It probably means a good draft for the Pies if they get, you know, Quayne or Kelly and also Wraith later on, just through their NGA/father-sons. Tex Wanganeen's an interesting one. Younger. I know we're looking down the track a little bit. But such an Essendon name, but such a prominent Port Adelaide name as well. And I think he was at Addison and training a couple of weeks ago as well as part of the Father-Son Academy.
Can you take us inside the jostling these Cubs do? Because they're starting very early these days.
You have to, don't you? You have to because you have to be there to be picked. I mean, it's sort of the Joe Danaher situation was probably one that probably started really showing how you can be picked early on and committing to a club well before your draft age comes along. Look, whether Texas is going to be good enough, we'll have to wait and see, but I'm looking forward to following that. Gavin Wagner used to be my favourite player at Essendon, number four, before he left us.
Who's the number four at the moment?
Us. left the Bombers. Yeah. Who's number four at the Bombers at the moment? Kyle Langford, and for some reason can't get a game. Geelong have three possibilities in this year's draft. You're a Cats man.
Well, Bailey Scott, as you said, I think all the signs are that he goes to Gold Coast, but it's still yet to wait on that decision. Oscar Brownless will play Vic Country again this year. I understand he played a few games last year, Oscar Brownless. And
he's got a bit of toe, runs well on the outside, probably needs to tidy up his kicking a little bit, but he's been pretty prolific at TAC Cup level, so showing him he can find the footy.
And he's putting a lot of time and effort in. I understand he's not at school this year. He's been doing spot him down at the Cats a few times. Okay. So he's doing a little bit down there. Baxter Mensch, Davidson is one that's come on in the last couple of weeks. Mm. He had 35 back-to-back weeks playing for the Geelong Falcons. More of an inside midfielder, 177. So he'll need a few special traits to get picked.
Mensch and Brownless, two big key forwards, have produced two little midfielders. But we'll wait and see how that one goes. Xavier Naish is also one for next year. The younger brother of Patrick, he's at Northern Knights, looks just like him. So I was a big fan of Paddy and have been watching him at VFL level a couple of times this year, and it's been good to see his progress as well. Look, that's the father-son's done. As we mentioned at the top of the show, Max King has been a massive story already in this year's draft pool. Started the year with 8 goals in his brilliant first-up performance for Sandringham Dragons and then went down with a knee injury. We caught up with him yesterday, had a big chat with him there. And look, it's fair to say that he's handling it all really well. Let's hear from the man himself. Well, Max King does join us on the podcast today on Road to the Draft. And look, it was a really disappointing outcome for everyone who was interested in watching Max play footy this year when he went down with his ACL injury. And I'm sure it's been a tough few weeks for Max. It's time we had a bit of chat with him, though. Max, thanks for joining us on the Road to the Draft podcast. How's it been?
Thanks for having me, Carl.
How's it been the last 3 weeks since the injury and how you've sort of handled it all?
Initially it was pretty disappointing. You go into the season having high hopes for the year and sort of all came crashing down, but I think once I got over that initial disappointment, you move on to rehab and gets a bit more positive.
So can you talk us through the day? You're playing school footy for Haileybury College against Geelong Grammar, I believe. So take us through the moment, how it happened, and I guess the immediate aftermath after that.
So I was in the second quarter, early in the second quarter. I jumped for a mark and landed awkwardly on my knee, felt a pop, and went down in a fair bit of pain. So that's how it happened. And then I guess I was in shock for a fair bit. I hadn't really come to terms with it all. And then, it all sunk in. So it was a pretty devastating day.
How much pain were you in? I mean, some players talk about their ACL injuries and they sort of feel a bit of a snap, as you say, or a pop, and then the pain goes away a little bit. But for you, I understand it probably wasn't like that quite as much.
No, I was in a lot of pain for a fair bit. I think it's because I also did the MCL and the lateral ligament. So I think that added a bit of pain to it.
Yeah. And that sort of afternoon, obviously, it was a pretty early game and school footy and all these sorts of things are happening. Talk us through those hours afterwards and how that period was.
I had a couple mates come around to just sort of comfort me. So they were really good. Mum and dad were really good. But it was a pretty tough afternoon. It was just coming to terms with what had happened initially.
Yeah, I imagine the shock factor would be a big thing to sort of overcome as well on the day off.
Yeah, I think the first week was disbelief, and then you sort of get over it pretty quickly.
As soon as you did go down, what's going through your head? I mean, apart from the pain side of things, are you immediately thinking about the year ahead and thinking you've done the worst? What was sort of racing through your mind?
Well, I knew straight away that I'd done it. So, it was pretty devastating. It's a big year and pretty hard to miss out on school footy, nationals, things that I've really been looking forward to. So, when it did happen, all of those things sort of run through your mind.
I was speaking to your manager, Robbie D'Orazio, about you a couple of days afterwards and sort of saying that you were in pretty good spirits, and you say now that sort of as soon as it happened, you do have to sort of dwell on it for a little bit and then start to move on and look forward. At what point did you start to sort of turn your attention to the rehab, and how long did that take?
Yeah, I think after a couple of days, maybe even a week, you start to look to the positive side of it, and you know, it will give me the chance to put a bit of size on, get in the gym. So it's just looking forward to those little milestones. It's a long process, but yeah, you slowly get through it. So things to look forward to.
Had a bit of time on the couch since then, Max. Have you sort of been catching up on some Netflix or PlayStation or Xbox or something like that since the surgery?
Yeah, well, today was my first day back at school. So
okay. How'd that go?
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. Still getting used to it. But, yeah, had my time on the couch and now getting back into things.
Did you have much contact from any other AFL players who'd been through a similar injury sort of in the days after?
Yeah, a few. Chris Judd was probably the big one. Sent me a text just saying he had shoulder recos in his draft year, and just gave me some great advice on how to handle that and stay positive, because these things do happen, but you know, you get over them.
I guess these things do happen, but coming into the year, and I guess the week before as well, a couple of weeks before, you had a stunning game for the Sandy Dragons, kicked 8 goals in your first game of the season. So I guess you yourself would have had really high hopes for showing what you're able to produce across the year. Having that taken away from you, is it disappointing? What's the overriding feeling about it? Are you angry about it, or is it something that you sort of just got to move with?
Yeah, it is disappointing, but it's out of my control now, and I think the thing that I control is how I go about my rehab, and I'm sure I can still impress clubs with being really switched on with my rehab. So,
and how many of them?
It is disappointing.
And how many of them have been in touch, sort of recruiters that you've got to know through the AFL Academy and obviously Vic Metro as well? How many of them were in touch afterwards to sort of, I don't know if consoling is one way to put it, or just sort of help cheer you up a little bit?
Yeah, most of them have been in touch with me, and they've all been great with offering support, and yeah, I couldn't thank them enough.
Now, that day you went down, your brother Ben, your twin brother Ben, actually kicked 11 goals. So when did you hear about the fact that he'd kicked such a bag, and and what was his take on it from being out there on the field?
As I was in the rooms, people kept coming in and updating me on on how he's going, and he just kept kicking them. But yeah, I was happy for him, but obviously still devastated. He was really good for me that night. He stayed by my side the whole time, and you know, he was pretty flat for me. So yeah, he's been really good support through it.
And you've been good support for each other coming through too. I mean, tell us about your relationship as brothers, and how you've sort of been in the same side together all the way through and played at different ends of the ground, maybe sometimes alongside each other in the forward line as well, and what he's like as a player. And what's it going to be like for you all year to be watching him?
I'm happy that I get to watch him, and you know, I really want him to do well as he does for me. So it's been great playing with him, you know, all through juniors. And yeah, we're really close and just both want the best for each other, both push each other. So it's just great having someone like him by my side.
He's been playing the forward line a little bit more the past couple of weeks since you haven't been around. Where do you see him playing his best footy? Because it is a point of conjecture. He's played a lot of great footy at centre-half back and some really good footy at centre-half forward too. What's your opinion?
Personally, I think he's a better defender.
Okay. What does he think?
I think he's loving kicking goals down forward. So
everyone likes kicking goals.
Yeah.
That's it. You're still tipped to be a very early draft selection. I mean, in the back of your mind, are you already sort of preparing for your first preseason at an AFL club and thinking that, you know, because the injury did happen so early in your draft year, that next year's not out of the equation in terms of playing?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the positives of the injury is that I get to get in the gym early and prepare my body for senior football a lot earlier than a lot of other kids do. So 4 or 5 months out from the draft, I'll be in the gym every day, which is, you know, a real big positive, and hopefully help me play senior footy as early as I can.
Obviously, you won't be rushing things, and there's no sort of, I guess, aim to be back this year. But what's your first little milestone? What's the one? Obviously, your first day back school today, and that's sort of, I imagine, on the crutches and all those sorts of things. But what's your first milestone in terms of your rehab that you're sort of looking forward to ticking off?
I think in 3 or 4 weeks, I'm off the crutches and I'm walking. So that's the main milestone at the moment. That'll just allow me to move around a lot easier. And so looking forward to that.
Max, you sound like you handled it as well as you can. It's obviously a real blow to you and setback for you this year, but we're all really excited to see you come back, play as soon as possible next year, and good luck for sitting on the sidelines for that year. Hopefully you can handle that as well as possible too. So appreciate you coming on the Road to the Draft podcast. It's obviously not a really fun topic to be talking about, but all the best, and we look forward to seeing you back out there as soon as possible.
Thanks, Cal. Thanks for having me.
What do you think of that, Mitch? He's obviously a really impressive young man and is handling a setback, I think, as well as you could hope, really.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing what he does in the next 6 months. Obviously, a lot of footy for him to learn and see. So I'm sure he'll be around the championship group and seeing his brother at Halebury. A great coaching committee down there.
Chris Judd as well, just in touch. Nice little text message.
Well, the Connor Stable is doing well there to put Chris Judd in touch, but nice to have a mentor in your corner like Chris Judd.
Absolutely. Now, should we get to the Twitter questions?
Because they
come in thick and fast, as they always do, and we don't get to everyone, but keep sending them through, and we'll try and get to them throughout the week. Sorry if we missed you this time.
Well, Ash kicks it off. Looks like a Dogs fan here with a question on Riley West. Looks like he's moved up in the draft order. What will the Dogs have to give up, Kel?
Well, I think they'd be hoping that they'd use their second-round pick on him. A bid would come in between somewhere of their first and their second. So, look, here, some clubs really rate him quite highly. Others have some reservations about maybe his ball use by hand and even by foot. But I see him somewhere in the top sort of 15 to 18 now. But whether the bid actually comes there, you're never quite sure, because obviously, father-son sometimes fall a little bit further than they maybe should. But I think if the Dogs use their second pick on him under the point system, that would be a good result for them if a bid came somewhere between 15 and 22, 23, depending on where they have that second pick in the end.
Strong father-son crop at the Dogs.
Yeah,
Go again.
Another Skebs father-son for the Dogs. Lockie Hunter, Addison Kevins.
Yep.
Mitch Wallace, Addison Kevins. Obviously, Tom Liberatore, Addison Kevins as well.
I don't think the Liberatores are just stopping yet. They've got Oliver to come maybe in 2019. So,
Looking well ahead.
Yes. Scott has asked a question on the Murray Bushrangers. Eli Smith, what can you tell us about the bull up on the Murray?
He's described him as the bull, the roaring bull. He's played 6 games for Murray this year. He had 24 and 9 tackles and 7 clearances on the weekend, the Northern Knights. So, yeah, he can win his own footy and has shown that pretty consistently. So we'll wait and see how he goes later in the year against some sort of better opposition as things step up.
James asks, who are the best West Australian prospects at this stage, and who do you think Frio will target with their first pick? Ian Hill is one I want to ask you about after you get to
this question. We'll start with Ian. I mean, he's a sensational little player, and it's funny how clubs rate him. He reminds me a lot of what Jared Pickett was producing at the same age in his draft year out of WA. Real speedster, had done a lot as bottom major, and now has come into the top age system. I think he's probably just as talented as Jared, and maybe even more talented. Jared hasn't been able to go on with it yet at AFL level, hasn't been able to get fit enough to do it, has had some injury setbacks as well. But look, Ian's kicking goals. He can play at half back, which he has done at stages. He can play on the wing. His best position is as a small forward, but he can take a mark above his head. He can run up the ground. He had a restricted pre-season with his shoulder surgery, only just came back in the footy a little bit before the season started. So he's by far and away the best WA prospect, and a pretty settled kid as well, really really bubbly and fun and good company. So his nickname's Bobby.
Yep.
It's because he actually used to watch Bob the Builder a lot, which is a nickname that you're going to have to carry around for the rest of your life now, because no one would ever expect that you pick up a nickname from what child show you watch. But now he's got Bobby Hill, and will be called Bobby Hill forever. A second cousin of the Hills at Freo.
Can we see their centre line read Hill next year?
Yeah, that'd be fun, wouldn't it? Hill. Look, where are they? They're pick 7 at the moment. They'd have to look at him pretty closely. Yeah, and he'd be right among that range, I think. So is that what they necessarily need? They're in a pretty good spot. If they had Ian Hill to the midfielders they picked up last year in Chera and Brayshaw, that'd be a pretty nice addition, I reckon.
Okay, Toom, let's hope it might be a relation to you.
It's not me, I don't think so.
This is going early as well. Fantasy next year, who are some players who will have some upside? Who are some ball magnets, Cal, do you think might play or be ready for early action in 2019?
Well, everyone will be looking for Sam Walsh. He had another 33 touches on the weekend for the Falcons, so he's a good little player. A very good player. Bailey Smith has been on fire. He's a ball winner inside and outside. Ned McHenry might be a little bit further back in the draft, but can find the footy. He had 22 and 11 tackles on the weekend for the Falcons. Riley Collier-Dawkins is a taller inside midfielder. He had 21 on the weekend and has been pretty good at finding the footy at TAC Cup level this year. Zach Butters is another one. He might be a smaller type, maybe a little bit like Lockie Fogarty. He comes in and finds the footy at will. He had 28 disposals on the weekend for the Jets and has had a really consistent season. So you have to look for those ones who are going to be a little bit surprising, aren't you? I mean, who would have thought that so many of last year's draft would make an impact so early this year?
I think it's 33 players from last year's draft have already debuted this year.
Is that right?
30 players who have debuted, I think three being already have played before they were redrafted this year. Just on Lockie Fogarty, are you surprised with how well he's adapted to the level in a side that will be probably pushing top four this year at Geelong?
Yeah, I am, definitely. I liked him in his draft year. I didn't sort of have him in that top 10 to 12. I know some clubs rated him pretty highly around there. I think he was probably on the Giants' radar as well at that pick 11 if things had sort of fallen a certain way. But the Lions liked him as well in that mid-teens selection. They took Zach Bailey and Brandon Stasevich. So he was in the mix there. And then he obviously got through to the Cats and hasn't put a foot wrong, has he? I mean, you've followed the Cats and you obviously been down there a lot this year.
I reckon he's front of the queue of Chris Scott's coach's pets already after eight games.
For a start, he's a really nice kid and he's a very likeable kid, so that would help him. He's living with Paddy Dangerfield's in-laws, so that probably doesn't hurt as well in terms of getting a game. But look, he's tackles.
Yep.
He works hard. He kicks a goal when he needs to. Like, he can chip in and he did that regularly last year. So he fits ticks a few boxes. So it's been good to watch him play well.
Just another question here from Zach. With it looking likely Essendon will have a top six pick and the clear deficiencies.
That's optimistic.
clear deficiencies in the midfield. Who looks like they may fit the bill for the Bombers?
Well, Sam Walsh is the obvious midfielder that you'd want to look at. Look, he's more probably suited to outside footy, I think, when he first gets into the AFL system, but he can find it himself. He's more lightly framed, though. I guess Bailey Smith is someone that is coming up the ranks. I mean, he's a player that you can probably pick with the confidence in that sort of top 10 to 12 selections and know what he's going to provide straight away. He's hard as nails. He can run all day. He won the 2 kilometre time trial over in America in the trip that we were on ahead of Sam Walsh and ahead of Ned McHenry, who are both great runners too. So works hard, completely dedicated. I watched him play for Xavier on the weekend where he's captain and he shone as well. So he's a midfielder who might be in that mix too. Look, I reckon I've got about 10. I reckon I've got a group of 10 now. You're in my 10. Do you want to hear him?
Yes.
Bad luck.
Go for it.
Ben King. This is no order, by the way.
Yep.
Ben King, Max King, Sam Walsh, Taron Thomas, Jack Lukosius, Ian Hill, Isaac Rankin, Connor Rosie, Nick Blakey, and Bailey Smith. So that's my sort of group of 10 who have sort of put themselves above the rest at the moment.
Okay, we'll skip on to John's question. About a couple of players I wouldn't mind seeing in that top 10. Connor Rosie, Jack Lukosius, Haitley, who are some of these guys that would get an opportunity in the Victorian VFL competition like we see with the guys in the SA? Because it is a big upside, John asks.
Yeah, it is a big upside for them to be able to experience that. And that's where Jackson Haitley has pushed himself up the order because he's performed well at Sandford level so far this season. And Lukosius and Rosie have done that too. Lukosius has done it since he's been playing. Rosie a couple of weeks ago stepped in at Sandford level and perform straight away. So it is a bit of a shame that big kids don't get to do that even once or twice, but they do have a few clubs they're jumping around. I can sort of understand in some ways, but I would like to see it too because, look back way, way, way back to Jake Stringer.
Yep.
He played some games for Bendigo Bombers at the end of his draft year. Things weren't sort of all rosy there at the Bendigo Pioneers with him. He went up and played the Bendigo Bombers team and Sean, and that was a big key reason why the Dogs were confident of taking him into that top 10 pick. So, and he obviously helped him win a premiership and was an All-Australian. So I think some insights you can get from those games are pretty valuable.
Just on that top 10 you named, who are some players in there that maybe sort of need a little bit more to prove later this year? That we know the Kings
are pretty
will be
set
in there.
I think the Kings are pretty set. I think Walshy is a pretty rolled gold star. Taron Thomas has done everything that's been asked of him so far. Lukosius the same. Ian Hill, I think we'll still want to see him go really well at the champs. So he really, because he's small, he's 178 centimetres or something, so you still have to perform pretty well at that size. Isaac Rankin will be interesting to see how he goes. He's had an up and down sort of start to the year, had suspension, came back, kicked four goals. straight away. Rosie's still maybe a little bit speculative for if he's right good enough to be in that sort of batch, but I like the fact that he can play anywhere on the ground. He's got real jump and spring in his legs and can kick a goal and take a mark as well. And Blakey is a pretty sure thing too. Maybe Bailey Smith is the outlier there, but I think he's pushed himself in with performance. So that's a pretty good 10.
Yep, a question from Sammy D.
Sammy D? Sounds like a DJ or something.
Well, one of the answers might be Sammy W because he's asked two of the 200-game players, obviously, aside injuries. Yeah. Sammy Walsh is one of your favourites in the draft this year. Of that top 10, who are some of the guys or potentially outside of that who are guaranteed 200-game players?
Guaranteed. Look, I think all those guys in there, you'd be hoping to get a lot of games out of them. I did mention Jackson Haitley before, and I think that he's shown a lot so far to suggest that he's going to be a very solid AFL player at worst. So he's one that I think we'll be looking for in the early part of the teens or maybe later in the first round, but we like what we've seen so far from him.
And a question from Kieran. We touched on it earlier on the show. Taran Thomas, where do you see him falling? Kieran asked with North sort of finishing that 6th to 12th range in the draft, potentially even earlier. And as you said, how does that impact maybe if they look to recruit another player before they get to Taran?
Well, they could. I mean, obviously the trade period's before the draft, all the bidding happens on draft night, so they could look to the trade period. And obviously they've got a lot of money to spend again, North Melbourne, I'd imagine. They didn't end up spending it all last year, so they'd still be saving some of it. If they go and attract a key player in the trade period, whoever it is, and say, here's our first pick, then they can match the bid with their latest selections or go into a points deficit, obviously, for next year's draft. They'll eventually have to pay for it with a first-round pick. That's the way the system goes. But if they think that this year's an option, an opportunity arises that they could get in a star with a first pick and then match the bid for Taran, then that's a possibility. Look, as Kieran says, if they finish 6 to 12, it's most likely that a bid will come, I reckon, somewhere in that top 5 to 8.
Yep.
So they'll be sort of right on the edge there. It'd be a great result for North Melbourne if they get a player in their first round with their first pick and then match a bid for Taran. I think that'd be the ultimate result for them, and they'll be hoping like all hell that that happens. But the way he's going, it might see that a little bit difficult. But, you know, it's funny these father-sons and NGA players because clubs sometimes just give up on doing work on them. And then it gets the draft night and they haven't done all the work on them because they always knew they're going to get the bid match. So then they don't want to put the bid in case they get stuck holding the baby.
Okay.
So that's why some of these guys, like I know some clubs probably have stopped putting a bit of work in Nick Blakey now.
Yep.
Why would you want to interview him? What's it matter?
Yep.
So I'm sure they will, and they'll have met him at this point, but he's not on their focus or on their radar now, and probably others the same for Taran Thomas. So whether they get to that top end of the draft and they want to put a bid on draft night and then say that their real pick six that they end up getting is their second choice. Would you want to do that? There's a bit of an optics feel about it as well.
Is that tough for
I don't think it's tough. I remember speaking to Will Setterfield about it on draft night because obviously, Sam Petrevski-Seaton about it on draft night because the Carlton Footy Club had put a bid on Will Setterfield.
Yep.
It had got matched and then they picked Sam Petrevski-Seaton. Sam didn't care about much. He was very laid back, so I didn't think it worried him. But I thought other players it might have.
Yep. And a timely question from Madison. Cal, any midfield depth?
Billy.
Sorry?
Billy Madison. Where does that rank in your Adam Sandler movies?
Oh, it's top three.
Top three. What's your top three?
Geez, you put me on the spot here.
Come on. I reckon it's easy.
Happy Gilmore.
One. Yeah, definitely one.
You know what? It's underrated and you might laugh at me on this. Mr. Deeds is one of my favourite movies.
Yeah, I'm laughing at you on that one. If one of your favourite movies?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And number three, you reckon Billy?
Probably Billy, yeah.
Well, I'm going to go Big Daddy at number two.
Yeah.
And Waterboy at three.
Yeah, actually.
No, you've had your three, Mitch.
Okay, we'll get to Madison's question before we have to dwell on that. So much has spoken, Cal, in this, the top end of this draft. Who are the second rounders? Is there much depth around that region?
I think the top 30s are a pretty good crop. I mean, Madison wants to know more about the midfielders. I think around that sort of second round 20 to 30 mark, we might see the likes of Jai Caldwell come in. He might be a little bit earlier than that, but Jai Caldwell can find the footy from John Grammer. Tom Lewis from South Australia might be a little bit further back, but has certainly found the footy over there. Jack Bytel's had a great month in TAC Cup for the Cannons. Tom McKenzie, player from the Northern Knights, has shown a lot of promise, and I think he is a guy in that top 20 range. And we mentioned Chase Jones earlier as well. In that sort of spot of the draft. Alistair Richards is another who's a half-back player who probably plays midfield maybe a little bit more but might play half-back more for the Metro side. It might be that second or third round too.
And just a question without notice. On our rundown. I watched Friday night's game. Obviously, Ben Ronk got all the headlines, but there was another story out of the game being Tom McCartan debuting for the Swans. In a similar case to what we might see this year with Max King being missing a lot of footy. He had his own problems in the last couple of seasons.
Yeah.
What did you like out of his start to his AFL career? And, gee, he looks a prospect. And every time you hear Horst Longmire speak on him, it's really high regard for what Tom McCartan's brought in his first 6 months at the club.
I've known Tom for a while. We followed Paddy through his draft age year in 2014 and going places. I got to know the whole McCartan family really well. And one of my favourite memories of Tom, probably my favourite memory of Tom actually, is going down for dinner one night, or we're shooting a video maybe, one of the nights we went down there. Anyway, Tom was out in his backyard cracking a whip, and he's an amazing whip cracker. And it's phenomenal.
His broadcast made a big note of that, but you were onto it early.
We were. He was nuts. He loved it. And he was running around with his whip cracking around, and obviously his other brother, Charles, was getting involved in there as well.
I think he's a footy analyst in the making, Charles.
He is. He's got his head screwed on. So he's well and truly across everything in the AFL system and even the junior system too. So look, I was rapt for Tom, and he played quite well too. He had a couple of nice handballs and grabs and moments that make you think that he can have a pretty strong career. I mean, what he's really good at is his work ethic. He's, I guess, been the engine up there since he got to the Swans and impressed everyone with his running and ability to just keep on competing. Look, he's probably got a little bit of work to do by foot, but what you saw on Friday night was really promising, and it was exciting for him, and I'm sure the whole McCartan family were excited, maybe cracked a whip on the way home.
Okay, well, let's go on to the next...
Song of the week.
Because...
this is a segment.
This jumped out on the rundown, and I had to sort of inquire as to how big this has become, because you said it's got its own little cult following.
It does.
I listen to DMAs coming out of your laptop all day in the office. Yeah. Not yet.
Not yet. You can speak up when you do. But I've taken on the role of office DJ, because some of the other music choices in the office are pretty crap. So I just go with the DMAs, boys. But look, this song of the week this week is by The Voids, which is a band spearheaded by Julian Casablancas, who's the lead singer of The Strokes.
Yep.
It's his sort of side band. It's a song called Permanent High School. There's sort of a few ominous vibes to it. Bit of a stuck in adolescence feel about it, which probably wouldn't be a bad thing, to be honest, to be stuck in adolescence. But
well, according to Chris Judd, Jake Stringer's stuck in adolescence this week. So
That was a little bit of a whack, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's Song of the Week, and that's the podcast. Mitch, you've been great.
Thank you, Kel.
You enjoyed it?
To listening in when you and Nat delve deeper into it later in the year.
We'll be back next week. Nat, I'm not sure if Nat's back for next week's show. I assume she is, but if not, we'll welcome you back, Mitch, and we'll see what Nat brings back with her from China.
She might have an answer on Bailey Scott out of the Suns camp. Let's see if she can deliver some gold.
Let's put it on her. All right. On that note, we'll see you all next week. Roads of the Draft listeners. See ya.